check it out. Un territory. Ain't nobody been there. You understand? Undiscovered. So call somebody and tell somebody. There's a new day, and there's also a new sheriff in the town. A lot of things will be exposed real soon. Love you. Be good.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 123 of the Uncharted Territory podcast. My name is Chad Olson. I'm coming to you from a very disheveled Cellar Dweller Studios. There was a bit of a natural disaster last week. There was some flooding. It went through the wall from my daughter's bedroom into my office. Nothing was harmed, thankfully. The only loss between both of our rooms was a little house in the big woods book. So, Laura Ingalls, you'll be okay. It is a lovely 40 degrees right now. Spring break is next week. It's not spring break at all around here. It's very cold, very blustery. We're going to go to St. Louis next week to do a trip that was derailed by the pandemic of 2020, if you remember that fun time. But it's not very spring-like, but we're still going to have some fun. And speaking of having some fun, we're going to have some fun tonight with our lovable crew. My brother, Corey Olson, is, I don't know where he is. I'll be honest. I don't know what he's doing. He's on assignment. He could be sleeping in the corner. I'm not sure what's going on. But we
sleeping
have
in the
guest.
Corner sounds pretty good.
Well, yeah, I could go for a nap right now. We have a special guest tonight, and I'll introduce the regulars, and we'll get to our special guests. So, Tim Dalton, Buffalo, New York, straight off the H&R Block Express. How you doing, sir?
Just off a phone call with a tax client. Once I thought I was retired, I got yanked back in by some friends of mine, and there you go. I'm doing well. It's a little chilly here. I think this time of year, average temps in Buffalo are usually around 38 degrees, and we're a few degrees under that, but nothing terrible. No noticeable snow on the ground of note, you know, nothing that you're going to have to shovel or get rid of. So that's good. And probably, you know, going to be around that 30, 35 degree temp for the next few days. But, you know, next week I won't give a crap because I'm going to be in Arizona. So I'll be fine.
Tim and I will both be on assignment next week, but we will record a special segment just for you fans because we love you. All right, Stu Lowry in Virginia. How you doing, Stu? Not drinking eggnog?
No eggnog tonight, just a straight old chocolate milk. No chaser. Happy to be back after a couple of weeks absence. Delighted to be talking about the subject we're talking about tonight, so more on that in a bit. Is this the first Laura Ingalls mention, I think, on Uncharted Territory? It has to be. I cannot think we are... mentioned her.
I think
before.
On episode 8, we talked about a diorama that Corey built of on the banks of Plum Creek when he was a child. I don't know. I could be wrong about that one.
Yeah. You might have just dreamt that.
I might have dreamt that.
I think I may dream it tonight. The weather is still pretty nice here in Virginia. I mean, in February, we had some days in the 70s, and one time we surpassed 80. March seems to be going the opposite direction. We're going to be in the 50s and 30s for a little while, but still not too tough to take. It's been a pretty mild winter by even Virginia's standards. So no complaints there, and was actually a beautiful day today. So sunshine and about mid-50s, little breeze, but still felt very nice and crisp out there, and looking forward to the discussion tonight.
All right, very good. And tonight, our guest is hailing from the windy city of Chicagoland, Michael Brada. Welcome to the show. He's a survivor of the Great Quality Inn Near Massacre of 2022. How is it indeed windy tonight in the windy city?
It is not that windy. We're about in the 30s. I'm going to get to, I think, the 40s tomorrow. But we're kind of hanging in there. I feel honored that I get to discuss the weather, you know, with you guys. It's a great privilege. So yeah, we're about in the 30s and 40s, and that's gonna kind of stay that way for a few days, and possibly rain, but no snow. So that's always a good thing.
Good, no snow is a good thing indeed. All right, so we're going to get started first by talking about a couple of Legends previews. We have been off. I mean, we're always off, but we have been off for a couple of weeks now, so we've had a preponderance of releases. So first we'll talk about Cora Combs. Tim, you want to talk about Cora Combs? I believe you went to high school with Cora, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I was her sociology professor. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of cool to have Cora in the game. You know, one of the older, group, I guess, of lady wrestlers from back in the day, you know, was a pretty good worker from the, you know, few matches that you could see on YouTube and find anywhere. Was able to read a little bit about her and try to build that into the card. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool to have her in the game. I will say, you know, normally I complain about the art all the time. I will say that this time I didn't like some of the photo references that were used for some of the ladies. And Cora was one. That's kind of a common photo of her, but I kind of like the one when she had dark hair before she did the dye job. But you know, that's just me. So, I mean, anybody can complain about these things, and by God, if it can be complained about, I'll do it. So,
you are a master of complaining.
I am. And those are my thoughts on Cora, though. I'm glad to have her in the game.
All right. Very good. Stu.
And I didn't know a whole lot about Cora Combs before I started researching her for the handbook. And if memory serves, and I'm not looking at my notes right now, I think she was the last surviving member of the famous troupe of Moolahs was she in that
Flying Valences?
Yeah.
No, that was a different troupe.
Yeah, well, she was a pioneer. Let's just leave it at that.
Buy the set and read the book, folks. You'll find out
the answer. Buy the set, read the book, because I can't remember squat. But I like the photo and I like the art, so we're down with it.
All right.
Happy to have Cora in the game.
All right, very good. Michael, what do you think about having Cora Combs in Legends?
Oh, I'm excited to have Lady Satan finally make an appearance in the game. And exactly. I could only hope that possibly, you know, somebody else in her family is not too far behind. The artwork I'm fine with, but it's just kind of a standard, you know, traditional artwork. I didn't think it was anything special that popped out.
Well, speaking
and as a spoiler, her husband Fred Combs will be coming in a legend set at some point in the near future.
I was going to reveal that her twin sister Nora Combs will be a pro prime card.
Even better.
Yeah. So, and then our next wrestler is Debbie Michael. What did you think I was going to say? All right, Michael, what do you think about having Debbie Malenko in the game?
Well, I have to be honest, I did not know of her until I, you know, read it on the teasers. I was not familiar with her at all. So, but I saw that on the boards, a lot of people are happy to have her, but I'll do some research and find out who she is. But I, like I said, I like to think of myself as a wrestling historian, but I was totally ignorant on the existence of Debbie Malenko.
Well, she kind of had a short time span. Stu, do you recall watching her at all? Any of your Japanese wrestling watching days?
No, I don't. I did watch some matches of her when I was putting the handbook together, based upon somewhat on Tim's recommendation, because she said she was just pretty darn great in the ring. She was fantastic. Holy smokes! I'm sorry I missed her. She was quite the wrestler. And became a pretty big legend in Japan. And I think we're Absolutely. Very lucky to have her in the game. And I'm excited to, you know, if I ever run a women's title again, she's going to be up there, baby. But right. The matches I saw, she is pretty darn impressive, working pretty snug. And she was quite a talent.
So, Tim, you did the research. You had the great opportunity to watch a lot of her matches. And I know that was a chore because they were snoozers.
Oh, they were terrible. You know, I mean, I remember watching her in All Japan Women, and I remember reading in the Observer back in the early 90s that her basic, you know, she got hurt during a match and it could end her career, and it wound up almost doing that. I mean, I know she's come back lately and been wrestling on some independent work shows and things, but she was fantastic. I remember liking her a lot, and going back and watching the matches did not disappoint me. Just fantastic worker, really good. A lot of submission moves, a lot of mat work, but could still get up and, you know, and do some flying moves if she needed to. Really, really good. I think she's a good kind of a what if question, because right after she won the All Japan Women's title is when that accident happened, or shortly after she won, is when the injury happened. And so you never quite know where she would have gone or what she could have accomplished. But yeah, great. Great in-ring worker. Really enjoyed watching her stuff. And, you know, if you go on YouTube and watch some of those All Japan Women's matches, if they're out there, I mean, man, they don't disappoint.
No, we talked after you put the card together, and I went back and watched some of her stuff. And I remember watching it probably on a tape I got from you back in the day.
Could be, yeah.
And she was fantastic. And I think when we were talking, we kind of compared her to a Magnum TA, and that she was really, you know, she'd been at a tag team, held the titles, mm-hmm. and then she was just kind of ascending up the cards when, unfortunately, that in-ring accident took place. And she has wrestled a couple times in the past, you know, what, 5 years or so. I think it was right before the pandemic we found some results for her, like one or two.
Right.
Certainly not a preponderance. But, yeah, so it's great to have her in the game. Kind of an interesting character. You know, we talked about if she should have, she did a lot of tag stuff, a lot of different tag moves, but you know, we don't have her partner, so
right. She won the tag titles with Sake Hasegawa, and they did a ton. I mean, they did the demolition finish, they did like a bunch of double team moves, and we were just going back and forth about whether to put anything on her card for that.
So spoiler, no tag team moves. So, and it is also exciting. I didn't say anything about Cora Combs, but it's super exciting to have her too, because she is a legendary name from the past that you always heard a lot about, despite her not having a ton, like she didn't hold the world women's title that much, if at all. She won the U.S. Version of the women's U.S. title, I think, 4 times from what I read. So it'll be exciting to have both of them. And who knows, maybe one or either of them will get some relatives for them somewhere down the line. Okay, so then the indie line, we've only missed one announcement, and that was for Titus Alexander. Anyone familiar with Titus Alexander? The crowd goes mild.
Okay. I may have heard the name, but that's about it.
He was a comedian. Didn't he used to have a show? Oh, that was different Titus, I think. So, I mean, you know what? Here's the thing. People are excited about him. That's all that matters. Just because we're ignorant doesn't
downplaying
it. We're excited that other fans and other folks from our game community are excited, right? You can share in others' excitement and enthusiasm, even if you're not super familiar with them. Then for Future Shock, we have a gentleman without a name. He is what I would call a little bald man, who is some kind of a accomplice, accessory to Mr. Sentra. I don't know. What do you guys think of him?
Little mad genius.
Maybe he's supposed to be like Paul Heyman.
Mini Lex Luthor.
Could be. But it's also interesting that, you know, supposedly Mr. Sentra is great on the stick. So having a manager type with him, that's interesting. And it'd be interested to see where this goes.
Michael, what do you think?
Besides being a name that I've often been called, Little Bald Man.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that could be the theme of this podcast as I'm looking around.
I resemble that remark.
It's not often that I'm the hairiest person on a freaking anywhere.
He seems to be a very interesting character. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. or where he goes with Mr. Sentra.
And then we last night there was the announcement of a gentleman called Peerage, who has some kind of affiliation, I believe, with the Prince of the Rose. It is not pronounced P-Rage.
I was going to say you need to be careful with that name.
Yeah, he does not have a UTI. He does not eat a glass of cranberry juice. He is Peerage.
I have had P-Rage
in my lifetime as well. We know. Yeah, there was that time you tried the Freebird trick.
As you get older, I mean, it's
just happens.
Yeah.
So he is one of Tarkanian's elite, joins the CWF.
I like the art. I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah. I always like the central stuff. Mike does a good job.
Yeah, I thought the artwork looked pretty good. He's, you know, got a kind of an odd background behind him. So I'm interested to read more about that.
All right. Well, tonight, you know, Michael suggested talking about some baseball games, and we said that's a great idea. Why don't you come on? We'll talk about some baseball games. So we're gonna focus tonight on some baseball games, kind of near and dear to Michael's heart. I think Stu has maybe played one or two of them, or is at least familiar with them. Tim, I'm not as sure. And then, time permitting, Stu or Tim might talk about some of their favorite baseball card and dice games beyond Strat-O-Matic, which they've talked about before. But, you know, we'll just kind of see where this goes. So, Michael, I'm going to throw it over to you. We'll start with your list. You have a game where the name is lost to the mysteries of time, if you want to explain that.
That is correct. So I remember getting it like late in the 1970s, and it was like a card, get literally like a playing card game. And it had a little box, and it had, you know, baseball player card artwork on it. And I played it so much that the box just disintegrated. And there was a football game from that same company, and I know I had that, but I didn't play as much. I wasn't a fan of it as much. And I actually sent my 94-year-old mother downstairs to the basement on Sunday to see if she could find the box so she could tell me what the game company was. But she found the well-worn, well-loved baseball cards, as she said in her own words, with a rubber band around it, but could not find the name of the company. But the baseball game, there was no strategy to it. It had like the 9 position players, and then had a result of either a hit, some kind of hit, or an out, something like that. So basically, you just had to make a lineup, and you know, you would deal the cards and see, you know, if you got any runs before you got 3 outs, and then you could play it by yourself or you could play it with someone else.
So, Michael, I may have found a photo on the Wikipedia. Hold on. Let's try to share the screen. It's a very small picture, unfortunately. Is this it? Batter Up Baseball?
No. I've seen that.
Yeah, but that's
not it.
Yeah, damn. That is not it. No, all it was just the cards in a, like I said, like a playing card box. There's nothing else that went with it. You basically had to have a lineup sheet and record, you know, the score somehow, or, you know, get your own little, you know, 3 tokens to, you know where players were.
So these were not real players it was based upon.
Correct. All it said was like first base, second baseman, shortstop. So you could make them, you know, you could do your favorite team and do the lineup and see what they did. But yeah, they just had the generic 9 position.
Didn't Topps have some cards that used to come out with their bubblegum sets that where you could do like again, but they had the pictures of the players on there, but they have like, you know, single, double, fly out. I thought they had something too.
Like this game?
No, it was on the actual, I know what Tim was talking about. Yeah, it was on the actual baseball card for I forget what year.
Right.
And on the corner after, you know, like, you know, Joe Brown likes to, you know, eat popcorn before a game, before
right.
The little stats there was on the side, yeah, that they did have that same thing. So you could collect them and flip them and
All right. Well, next, let's see, Michael, you had All-Star Baseball by Cadco.
Correct. Yeah, so that was the one. I don't know if Tim is familiar with it. It was basically a disc, and they had the player's name on there, and these were actual players, and it kind of went off their stats. So there were, it was like a pie kind of chart on a disc, and it would, you know, show you if they had strikeouts, they'd have a big ratio, and you spun, and each kind of thing had a number. So like number, I think one was a home run, and number 10 was a strikeout. So you would, again, no strategy, you would come up with a lineup, and, you know, then you would see what you got when you spun the disc, you know, what that player would get, and then you'd move on to the next player. It was kind of fun because it was a lot of Hall of Fame players, a lot of famous players, so you could do like an all-star game. I know they did come out in 2003. I think they had an anniversary edition that I got for Christmas, and it was this big metal box. And they, at that time, they came out with, the original game just had the player's name, didn't have any artwork. The anniversary edition actually had photos of the players in the center of the disc. And in fact, that year, I think that year or the following year, they came up with the final four teams that were in the NLS and ALS championship series. So they had, and I bought that, was the Marlins, the ill-fated Cubs of that year, and the Boston Red Sox, and the Yankees.
And there was some, because we played the heck out of this game, my brothers and I, and there was some, at least attempt to be statistically accurate, and that the pie chart, you know, like a Reggie Jackson would have a wide category for his home run, but there was also a fair amount of chance, because I think Burt Campaneris was leading the league in home runs at one point. So
for those who don't know Burt Campaneris, he was not a power
hitter. Look
him up. He probably had the narrowest one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I played it with my best friend. My brothers played it like one entire summer just going at it, and it was getting pretty heated. And finally, mom couldn't take their arguments anymore and took the game away. So that's what I remember.
Wow, that's hardcore.
Did they ever get it back?
No. I got to play it with my buddy. They didn't.
Oh, you got it.
Huh?
Did you get to keep it?
I don't know where it went. I think we all eventually just I don't know about outgrew it, but went on to other games, and it just got lost in our basement. And then finally, probably knowing my father, it got pitched. But it was a fun game for what it was. I mean, and you had all-star lineups, and you could craft your own teams. And like Michael was saying, it was a lot of fun.
I kind of remember it because I remember the discs and that. I must have played it because I remember it. I pulled it up just on to take a look at it, and I remember it, but I don't remember playing it. But I must have, because I as soon as I saw the discs, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this.
It was pretty popular.
Yeah.
So did Cattico make a lot of other sports games?
I know they do have, because I actually found it at a thrift store in Milwaukee. Day after Christmas, they had a football one that had the same kind of concept with the little discs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I pulled it up on eBay here. I'm taking a look at it. Thurman Munson, Pete Rose, Billy D. Williams. Stuff. Oh, just Billy Williams. I'm sorry.
Billy D. Williams. Sweet swinging Billy D. Williams.
Yeah. With his cold come to bat with a bottle of Colt 45. Man.
They could have did a bingo long card, you know, a special bingo long.
There you go.
All-star card.
All right. So then we have Harry's Grand Slam Baseball. And you said there's kind of a unique story behind this game.
Correct. So it was developed by a gentleman named Harry Ops, who was a German immigrant, and he migrated here to the United States in 1957. And he pursued a career as working as an interpreter for U.S. presidents. And he actually had presidents from Johnson all the way to Bill Clinton. And in 1958, he saw his very first baseball game, and he was just enthralled with it. And he saw that it had a lot of, you know, strategy and in it, and tactics. So he decided to develop a game, which he did. And let's see what on my notes. In 1962, he came up with the Olympic Card Game Company. So I found this one it was kind of like an anniversary edition. I found it at the park where I work in this metal box. So I don't know about too much more about what other games he developed, but I thought it was interesting because reading his bio kind of reminded me of Tom, that, you know, here's a gentleman that was very successful in another career and just was so enthralled with the game or some kind of sport that he decided to develop his own game to it. And this one does have a little bit of strategy. So each player is dealt, and this you have to play with somebody, each player is dealt three cards, and on there it they have either hits or, you know, outs, some kind of form of outs, could be error, walk. So if I was batting and Chad, you were the home team, I might have all outs. So I throw down a card and you might have a hit or a double. So you kind of have to see to get the three outs, but do the least amount of damage if you were the home team that you didn't want any runs. And I would try and, you know, get some runs. So that's kind of fun because, you know, you might have a bad hand, but you got to kind of work around it and see, you know, what the best you could do or the least amount of damage to the other team scoring.
Did this have real players, Michael, or
this did not. This was okay. Just baseball move. Like I said, it was just like a triple, home run, error, hit batsman.
I think I found a picture of it. Looks, the presentation of it's quite nice. Oh, Harry did a good job.
It looks like there was a reproduction done by a different company in 2005 because I found a used edition on. And it, but it's like in the metal, it looks like a little metal lunchbox almost.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
It looks just like that.
Yeah.
Just like what Michael's holding up in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. Now it's pretty neat.
All right. Nice. And then we have the Avalon Hill Sports Illustrated Pennant Race. Now I think Stu's familiar with that one as well, correct?
I am. I played another one, but go ahead, Michael. Avalon Hill line, I've played two or three of them.
So this one, I kind of found it in like early 80s. And this one you could play, it does have real players and actually has a whole season. So you could play an entire season and you could play a game in a couple of minutes, like maybe 30 seconds, depending how you do it. But there is a lot of math to it. It's that you roll three dice and you have to get to over 10, and then you take the white dice and you multiply it times the starting pitcher, and then the batting team has a value, and they might have lesser value against a left-handed pitcher, or they might get more of a value in a right-handed pitcher. And so you multiply, and if you get doubles, then there's an advantage. If two of the dice, I think it's red and green, you get a speed value. If it's white and one of the other colors, you get a power value. And then the park comes into play. The fun thing about this, like I said, it's a lot of math. I'm not the greatest math guy. I have to keep, that's why Stratomatic has kind of intimidated me that I never attempted to play it. I have to keep a calculator next to me to kind of figure it out. But I recently I had a couple seasons that I played, and I recently found on the internet the 1983 edition of this game. Somebody had put it on there, I think, about 20 years ago. And I printed it all out, and I've started playing it. I'm about four games in, and I'm going to attempt to recreate, like I said, you can, because you play all 162 games for all the teams. And so I'm going to try and recreate that season and see what happens.
That's awesome. It sounds a little, do you ever play Pay Dirt, the football game, Michael?
I have not, but I was familiar with it. Yeah. But okay. I never played it. Is that also Avalon Hill?
That was Avalon Hill.
Yeah.
One of my oldest brother had that game. That was a fun game too. More team concept than individual players. But if you knew the players, you could run stats to a degree.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking. I pulled that up because I've played a different Sports Illustrated baseball game. But yeah, I never played Pennant Race, but I just looked at it and it's pretty cool. I'm looking at a game from the 1982 season. And yeah, there's six dice that come with it. So that's a little scary for some. But yeah, nice like pads to record like club records and league standings and all this stuff. It's very well, all the Avalon Hill stuff was well produced.
It was.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Avalon Hill. We had in our local mall, we had a game store. So I would go there and just spend hours, you know, up and down the aisles and look and try and decide which one I wanted to purchase. And I looked at Stratomatic, and like I said, I kind of read the box. I'm like, it might be a little too for me, you know, too complicated for me. So I went with the Pennant Race. And also just, I did purchase Tidal Bout that you guys talked about a few weeks ago. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Awesome. And believe it or not, fans, there used to be stores like that. I had one near me at one particular time filled with Avalon Hill games. Not only the sports games, but the war game titles for which they were pretty famous too. And you, like Michael said, you could just walk up and down the aisles and to your heart's delight and find the game of your choice. But I never did Pennant Race, but it looked pretty interesting. And you're getting ready. You said you're getting ready to embark on a pretty ambitious project with that.
Correct. Yeah. I'm four games into it now. I'm going to recreate 40 years later, the 1983 season.
Okay, so. Cool.
By September, I'll be done.
Yes.
Float my memory a little bit, or help me out. Who were the big teams in 83?
83, you had the Chicago White Sox that kind of ran away with the whole division there. I think they won by 20 games. Mm-hmm. The Baltimore Orioles were a big team. Unfortunately, your New York Yankees were kind of.
They stunk then. They rebuilt for speed, and they were horrible, and they got a bunch of, and yeah, they were a mess back in the early 80s.
Yeah. On the other side, Philadelphia, on the National League, Philadelphia Phillies were really good. I'm trying to look because I've got my status.
Cardinals?
Board. Cardinals were on the second division.
Okay.
They were kind of more in the second division. The Cubs were terrible. That was the famous Lee Ilya rant. If you guys are familiar with that, the fans were yelling at him, and Tim's laughing. He, I think he remembers.
Just
goes off on this tirade of profanity about how the fans, you know, and 85% of the world is working. The rest of the, you know, come out here ripping everything you do. So who else was good that year? I'm trying. Like I said, I'm looking. I've got a standing board.
No, the Braves might have been okay.
Yeah, I think the Braves.
Yeah. Dale Murphy, Bob Warner.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember. Like, I know Baltimore was tough because those would have been the Ripken years. Because I saw him play third base for Rochester in the International League in '81, and he was called up after that. So he would have been a youngster, you know, in the beginnings of his record making consecutive game
pitching
streak.
Their pitching staff was, I think, they had McGregor and Flanagan.
I don't know if Boddicker was up yet or not.
Okay.
But yeah, their pitching staff was fantastic then.
They won the World Series that year, didn't they? 83?
Correct. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
I remember old Flanagan and Hannigan. They were a tough combo at short and second. Okay. And then we have History Maker Baseball by Play Games.
Yes. I just got into that a few years ago, and, I love Play Games. Just has great game engines. I've got several of their stuff. Listeners here might be familiar with the Face to the Mat, their wrestling game. Their History Maker Baseball is wonderful. That one has actual players. They do have a fictional league called their Baseball America League, what they've been doing about 20 years. And those are, like I said, fictional players. But the, you can get different seasons that they offer and play games. So you get 1985, you can get like current season. And then they have such a great game community that a lot of the fans do stuff much like the Pilsinger fans. And they have like a couple Negro League seasons or the women's baseball.
Oh, that's interesting.
From the 40s, yeah. But I'm trying to think of other ones that they had out there. They've got a couple minor league seasons, but great because each, like the pitchers have a quality and the batters have a quality. So you roll three dice and you look at them sequentially, and then that's how you kind of look and see if the pitcher has a quality, use that result. If the batter has quality, use that result. or you go to a fielder. There could be odd results. You have to go to an umpire chart. They also have umpires, and you have to look at that because some umpires, they're lenient or strict, or, you know, so they have different
bodies. They're like Angel Hernandez, and they're completely incompetent.
Yeah, he probably have the lenient quality, right? And so you could play, you know, games, and you could do them probably about, once you get used to the game engine, about 45 minutes to an hour, you could play a complete 9-inning game. They came up with something about a year and a half ago called History Maker Baseball Express. So it is a quicker, it's a game summary. So you don't play the entire game. It could, the inning could end with one batter. You look to see if it's got the quality. If not, you move on. So it's kind of a summary of what might have happened in the game. So you could pick a team and you could play a whole season of, you know, that team, you know, and see what they go with, just the History Maker one. They also, as I said, had a cool thing. There was, I don't know if Tim, you're familiar with the Continental League from 1961, which was supposed to be a league, an alternative league that Branch Rickey proposed.
Vaguely.
So it never went off the ground because then they expanded the baseball, I think, American leagues and stuff. So it never got off the ground, but they created this play game, created an actual, I think it was 8 teams or 12 teams of what might have been players that were available at that time that were kind of at the end of their career or guys coming up. And they made the they have the teams and they had team colors and they have wonderful cards. So you could play.
That's,
you
know, very cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of available where, you know, in this History Maker Baseball, whatever kind of niche you're into, you could find it.
And I like, I kind of pulled this up while we were talking, and I kind of like it. One of the things about play games is they always go with like those traits, like everybody, like whether it's the wrestling game, whether it's the roller derby game, which I have also, or this baseball game, everybody's got these traits. And then a lot of things, and sometimes they'll have like a little modifier next to the trait, and that kind of determines, you know, how the action goes. But I always thought it was interesting. I didn't like the wrestling game as much just because it wasn't as much blow by blow, you know, as Phil Singer. But it's very story driven and all that. And I think it's pretty cool how they've come up with these, you know, this game engine and taken it across all different sports.
I have the roller derby game as well. We were talking about before you came on the air. That's a lot of fun. And that's kind of very, you know, and they've got interviews that you roll, yep. Right? So it's kind of the really hits home the story driven, almost like their face to the mat one.
Yeah.
Have you done much with the Negro League sets? I mean, those always intrigued me. I never got into them heavily, but.
They only have, from play games, they only have two. They've got 1933 and 1944. So I've started playing the 1933 one. I played one game with the Chicago Americans versus the Homestead Grays, and it got to be a wild kind of crazy blowout. So I kind of stopped playing it. But I had seen a play here in Chicago about an actual female baseball player called Toni Stone, if you're familiar. She was the first woman to play in the Negro Leagues for the Indianapolis Clowns.
Wow. And
the Goodman Theater has they've got a play about her now. So they were saying in the play that, like, after the sixth inning, they kind of would do clown it. If the game was out of hand or something, they would just, you know, they would get into their kind of Harlem Globetrotter-ish kind of thing to entertain.
Like the Savannah Bananas, right? You're out there, yeah, doing crazy stuff.
So I, once the game got crazy, the last, like, three innings, I just did it from the Baseball Express, the History Maker Express. I just did it that way to get through the game, and, you know.
Yeah. I think 33, if I, and I'm doing this just off the top of my head, I think 33 was a big year for the Kansas City Monarchs. I think they had a stacked team.
Correct.
I remember hearing that because I listened to a podcast called Black Diamonds from the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, Bob Kendrick, and he always talks about, and, you know, the 1933 Kansas City Monarch team. And he always talks about that being one of the great teams in Negro League history.
That was Satchel on that team.
Yeah, I think everybody was on that team. I mean, a lot of the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, I think, were on
just loaded. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a few years ago, I went to a sports collection, collectible convention here in Chicago. And I went with this one guy, and he's like, here, come with me. I want to show you this. And we went to the back of the hall, and there were these several guys who had played later, like in the 50s, you know, like near the end of the Negro League. Mm-hmm. But there were all these guys sitting there at a table, and they had a book about the greatest Negro players. And some of you could just sit there and listen to them for hours, and they would tell you stories.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was.
I'd still be sitting at the table. They would have been dragging me out of that place,
throwing me out of there.
Yeah, that was really something, you know, they're showing. And I played with, you know, Josh Gibson and so-and-so. And yeah, it was just wonderful. Kind of like when you go to, you know, one of the TNT or something where you have the older wrestlers and they just kind of tell their stories and you just sit it as they would, as Ernie Ladd would say, underneath the learning tree.
Right? That's right.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic.
Sometime you guys will have to make it over to Kansas City to the Negro League Baseball Museum, because I've been there a few times.
Awesome.
It's super cool.
It's on my bucket list.
Yeah, my wife and I went when we were in Kansas City, and it was fantastic. It's very well done.
All right. Well, Tim or Stu, do you have any baseball games you want to talk about?
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, you know, I played other than Strat, which I've done both tabletop and PC. I'm playing the PC game now. I played APBA. I've done that. I think Chad, you even had a version of that, and we sat at your kitchen table and kind of yep. played a game out.
Yep.
There was another Sports Illustrated game, and I don't remember the exact name of it, but it was with all the like Hall of Fame, like All-Star type players. And it was based on, I think it was, you know, roll two dice, and it was like 11. You know, the 11 through 66 thing, kind of like APBA, but really good. I thought it was a really good game. I had a lot of fun with that. Unfortunately, you know, you just didn't have enough to create a lot of teams because it came with a limited number of cards. I mean, there were cards for different seasons in that, but as far as like the all-star teams and stuff, or the all-star players of all, you know, the greatest players, I mean, just couldn't do a lot. But that was really fun. I really liked that game a lot. And I've played some different ones too that have been just, based more on kind of luck than not based on actual players, but just, you know, you'd just pull cards to see who your players were, whether, you know, in what positions they were, and then just kind of either roll dice or flip cards to just kind of see what happened. But I played a lot. I mean, baseball's always been my favorite sport. And so I would always try to find ways to come up with baseball games that, whether they were good, bad, or indifferent, you know, in my opinion. You know, I would always try to find a way to you know, get a hold of those games and try them out. So, but yeah, great. Most of them are just real. They're all different, but they're all good, you know, in their own ways.
I got heavily into Strat for a long period of time, played it on PC, played it on tabletop as well. Tim, I think you're thinking of that Avalon Hill game, which is my current game of choice, is called Superstar Baseball, maybe?
That's it. Yep.
A friend of mine was heavily into that game and created the all-time great teams for every franchise. So oof. I got that card set. That is pretty darn nice. And then he did an additional set of just more players, not necessarily the all-stars, but just a lot of great players for each franchise, and mm-hmm. did the Federal League as well. So I've nice. Got all that. That is my current game of choice. That is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It is similar to APBA. And I never really played APBA. I know how you play APBA. And Strat and APBA were certainly the two big games or leaders in that category for years. But Superstar Baseball is my current game of choice. I really enjoy it. Plus, I've got access to all these great players that this guy did. He really did it well. And another game Avalon Hill put out in the Status Pro line that we played very heavily one summer was called Status Pro Baseball. And that was a lot of fun. I remember that game finally. And that's got a devoted following of people that are playing that game. I played it quite a bit for a while. And just, again, another fun game, another good way of approaching baseball. But I guess my favorite game is in recent years has been the Superstar Baseball as presented by this friend of mine, because the original game basically just had – it had a set amount of All-Stars, and that was about it. You're right, Tim. We couldn't really do a bunch of teams with it. But this current rendition is pretty good. And you can also get it on PC, and it's a lot of fun. And there's a guy that – his name escapes me right now, but I can find it later.
Richard Dombrov.
Put it in the thread of – That's it. Dombrov Baseball. That is Superstar Baseball.
Dombrov Baseball is Superstar Baseball incarnated for the PC.
You got it.
And he just came out with a new update, too, within the last week.
That's correct. He did a great job with it. That's a lot of fun, too. So highly recommend that as well. But there's so many games out there. Even I know there's at least one game I played as a kid, and I can't remember what the name of it was. And didn't play it much. Had very small cards. I remember that. In my first foray into the whole baseball game arena, I created my own game, which was just gosh awful with baseball cards using their stats. And I can't remember exactly how I did it, but it was not accurate. But like Tim, like Michael, I've always had a fondness for baseball, number one, and baseball games, number two. And of all the sports, I think you can make the argument that baseball is the easiest to capture on tabletop and do a good job with it and the flow of the game. And I've always enjoyed playing baseball games, and Michael, really appreciate your stories of your games. That was very interesting. Good to know. The History Maker Baseball is something I've always been, or I've been interested in. So glad to hear it does play well.
Yeah. Check it out. I'm glad to come on and share it with you guys. Yeah, Stratus Pro, I have a copy of, I think I got it at a garage sale from a neighbor across the street, like a 1987 one, and I had to kind of haggle with the woman to give it up, but I have never, I don't think I've played it, maybe I played it once, but it's funny, in the pennant race one, they suggest in the rules, like, well, if you want to play a full, or you want to play actual games, do the Stratus Pro, and then you can play the rest of the league in the pennant race. And see how
you're doing. That would work.
Yeah, I know. You know, a couple people that you know, the listeners might know, Mike Delve and Rob Nadon, that play the Phil Singer game, or Rob did. But I mean, they were big into Pursue the Pennant baseball. I mean, that was kind of their game that they were, you know, wholly and deeply involved in. They had leagues in the whole nine yards. So. Yeah, there's a lot of good baseball games out there. You know, you just need to find one that kind of suits you, and or find four or five that suit you, and just kind of dig in and go.
Has any of you ever played Dead Ball?
Oh, I forgot about that.
I haven't.
Yeah, I have. I've backed all of his Kickstarters. I don't know, something about it just kind of spoke to me as an independent, you know, game creator. So I have all five versions of, but I've never played it. So, and was Earl Weaver Baseball, was that only a computer game?
I don't remember having it. Yeah. So I don't know if it was only, but I do remember buying it for the PC. My sister got a computer, and I said, we got to get this.
One of my college roommates played that all the time, just like a computer. And I thought it was just a computer game, but it wasn't 100%.
That's hilarious. Because would he come out of the dugout and start arguing with the umpires and kicking dirt on him? That would have been great.
Absolutely.
Kick dirt all over the place.
All right. Well, I think this kind of wraps up our topic for tonight. Get to the shout out portion of our show. Michael, thank you for being here. Do you have any shout outs for tonight?
I do have a shout out. So I'm going to have to disconnect. Actually, I'll just... And I'll show you guys something. Unfortunately, the listeners can only hear it, but you guys can see it. I have a shout out to...
Oh, no, he's taking off his pants, folks. This is getting weird.
Rock Rims, who just sent me this Nils Mascaris. So
that's pretty cool.
For that, he had put it up on his Facebook site. They was getting rid of some stuff. And so I jumped at the chance of getting that.
Wow. That's nice.
I'm going to San Diego for a conference this June, and the last time I was there, there was quite a few lucha masks to be bought. So I might bring a big bag.
Michael, that's awesome.
Might be a very Lucha Christmas on uncharted territory.
You can't go wrong with wrestling, you know, Lucha masks. I mean,
no.
Exactly. You can have your whole wedding party just put if Lucha masks. Really
how would that ever happen?
That would never happen.
No.
All right, you'd have to have a wonderful wife that would put up with a bunch of idiots running around with wrestling masks on and suit and tuxedos.
And it's never stopped. All right. Well, thank you, Michael, for being on. We appreciate having you. Tim.
Well, you know, I was busy before I got on here. I was a little late getting on, so I didn't have time to do a good t-shirt promo, but by God, I got to do a t-shirt promo. Sure. So, you know, Uncharted Territory, we got all our stuff. It's high quality merchandise. And you know, all you've got to do, people, all you've got to do is go to tkostore.com. That's right. TEEKOstore.com. Get all your Uncharted Territory merchandise. You got hoodies, you got sweatshirts, you got t-shirts, you got, you know, it's just an endless supply. Well, actually, it's a very limited supply of things that you could do. But yeah, and we're still working on a new one, you know, a new option for you out there. That's that was Chad's baby, and he came up with a good one. So we'll see where that goes.
I just spoke to Pike Mojo about that over the weekend. So
there
I just
you go.
Get him a little design, and we'll get that rolling.
It's in the works. Other than that, I just want to say that for people on, you know, it'll be too late by the time you hear this, but by God, the World Baseball Classic starts tonight at 11 o'clock. So I'm at least 11 o'clock Eastern time, which is the only time zone that really matters. And as I'm pissing off the central
fake
time
news,
zone people.
Fake news.
But I believe it's like the Netherlands versus Cuba, you know, but I'll probably be up at least watching the beginning of the game just to watch it. And then, you know, next week when I'm out in Arizona, I'm all in on USA versus Canada. So, I'll be at that game. So that should be fun. And we'll see how it goes, but, that's all I got for tonight. I just want to thank everybody for listening. And, you know, last week I said we'd be back next week and we weren't, you know, you never know, but sometime. We'll be back with episode 124, hopefully in around a week's time, but we'll see.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Tim. Stu.
Michael, I wanted to first thank you again for being on. And I know our listeners can't see this, but he also has a killer promotional poster for, it looks like Kaufman and Lawler over his left shoulder. That is awesome. That is a fantastic piece of memorabilia to have. Very, very cool. I'm going to give my shout out to College Hoops because we are just about in my favorite time of year, which is March Madness. The conference tournaments are cranking up. I was raised on ACC basketball, and that is going on as we speak. Notre Dame and Virginia Tech are battling down to the wire. I am looking forward to this week of the conference championships, ACC in specific, and then I will be absolutely enthralled by the NCAA men's basketball tournament and women's for that matter. There's some interesting matchups there too and stories there too. I'm looking forward to it. It's just me, but I find this to be the greatest sporting event of the year. And just from the sheer one and done nature of the tournament, I absolutely love it and I am looking forward to it. So check it out, folks, if you haven't done so before. There's a lot of fun to be had. And with that, I will say good night, Denmark. And thank you all for listening.
Well, Stu, I agree with you. In 2 weeks, the greatest sporting week will start, or next week, actually, I should say, because it's NCAA Wrestling Tournament. None of this basketball bullshit. So congratulations to David Carr and Panero Johnson from Iowa State. They both won Big 12 titles. David Carr is the second ever four-time Big 12 wrestling champion. So congrats to him. He's a great young man. It's been great watching him compete. And Panero Johnson is just a freshman. So he's got a lot of room ahead of him. And he was either the number two or number three seed in the tournament. He's in a very tough weight class. And he was winning the finals 8-6. And about the last 10 seconds, you saw his opponent, who I think was from West Virginia, was really pursuing him. And Panero's kind of backpedaling, which I don't like seeing all the stalling BS at the end. And the guy charged at him, and Panero grabbed him and threw him right to his back. And if he got 2 points for the takedown, if it would have been any more time left, he probably would have been a 6-point throw or a pin. It was a great display. So I'm excited for next week. Get to watch that, and then after wrestling's done, I turn off my Hulu Live subscription because I can't see Twins games anymore, and I'll just wait till football starts and save about $70 a month. trying to, you know, save my money for the TNT Hall of Fame and Galacticon and all the fun we're going to have this summer.
I found out, Chad, going just quick, I'm sorry to interrupt, the wrestling, I found out that actually there was a kid from the high school that I went to in Hilton, New York, that was like a huge, like an NCAA champion that went to Cornell. I don't know if he's still doing it. He's got a very long Greek sounding last name. And I'm trying to think, I'm just trying to look him up now. Diakim Mayahalis, second Cornell's second wrestler to win at least three NCAA titles.
Oh,
two-time member of the USA World Team. But it was just weird. Somebody brought up and they said, "Oh, you know, they know I'm from Hilton." They were like, "Oh, you know, that wrestler's really good from there." And I'm like, "I have no idea who you're talking about." And then I found out the kid's like outstanding. I think he wrestles at 149.
So he's still active?
He could be. Yes, it looks like he is.
Cool. Well, I'll be rooting for him.
Yeah.
He's wrestling Iowa State. Then I'll boot his demise.
I believe he is. He's only lost one match in it looks like his freshman season.
Okay. Stuart.
Chad, I just want you to know that I did watch at least one evening of ACC wrestling for the ACC tournament for men's wrestling, and there was wrestling.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're watching some minor league stuff. I'm just kidding. All wrestling is good wrestling. I had reported 2 weeks ago that I was going to run a show from the latest set, the 2138, and I did get that started. Didn't get finished it because of a little bit of the disaster with the flooding, but I'm about four matches into my super show. So hopefully by the next time I'm on the podcast, I will have some reports for you, but it's been interesting so far with some of those characters. I'd like to thank everybody who listened to episode 122 and commented Mad Dog 1981, Lee, Troy, Pariah, another maybe Greek name here, Demos Thenes. I really can't pronounce that name. Sorry, guy. Throwing Toasters, Grant, The Faction, Top Dollar, Hala Hala, Matt, L. Divac. Again, not sure if he's related to Vladimir Divac. Please let us know. And the Tournament Master, Todd. Thank you for taking time to comment and listening. You know, Corey's good with the plugs for the shows. I'm not going to try it because I can't be as good and I don't remember them. I am going to give a little bit of update on the Gilbert Fox. A candlelight vigil has been held every night. No, I'm joking. But I saw him this morning. I'm like, here's the weird thing. It's been super cold, so he's not decomposing. And we have a lot of vultures, and we have bald eagles around here, also scavengers. Nobody's ate him. He just lays by the road. So I'm kind of thinking we might have to bury him or something because it's just sad. He's just dead. He's been dead for weeks, but he ain't moving. Nobody's eating him. So I don't know. I did see a new fox though last week when I was out for my walk. It was exciting. He was running across. So I don't know if this is his, the soulmate of the other one looking for the fox or something else.
Is he a visiting fox? Is he like just coming in the territory because he knows the other fox is no longer with us?
Maybe. It might have been like, I don't know. Do they have black fox?
Opportunistic fox.
The current Gilbert, the dead Gilbert fox is a red fox, but I got to Google. They have a black
fox. I remember fox. Red Fox. He was funnier than hell.
I mean, I just actually sent one of my employees. See, Elizabeth. I sent my one of my employees a Sanford and Son meme today. Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I did the heart attack one because she told me, she goes, but you can't know this. I go, I'll act surprised, grab my chest and fall out of my chair during the meeting when they announce this. So my goodness, we've segued all over the place, France. So,
we've gone off the track.
Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. Everybody stay safe and be excellent to each other. And we'll talk to you next week on episode 124 of the Uncharted Territory podcast. Peace out.
Hey promoters, it's Corey again, and we would love to hear from you. Please send us your questions, topic suggestions, or any other comments, and we might include your audio in a future episode of Uncharted Territory. There's two ways you can do it. You can go to tinyurl.com/UNCTER. Again, tinyurl.com/UNCTER. You can click the message button and record up to a 1 minute message, and we can include that in a future episode. Or you can email us either audio or a written question at our email address, utpodcast2020 utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Again, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Want to show your friends that you listen to Uncharted Territory? Well, head on over to our store at tkostore.com/collection/uncharted-territory. You can choose from a shirt or hoodie with Travis Heckel's great podcast cover artwork, or a shirt with a design inspired by one of our favorite bands. While there, check out the other great merchandise at TKO, including shirts of several of the top MMA fighters, including Bigfoot Silva, Tim Sylvia, Ensign Inoue, and more. Need a shirt made for your event or organization? Contact TKO, run by Filsinger Games promoter Justin Bulka, aka Pike Mojo, to place your order. Again, that's tkostore.com, TEEKOstore.com.
Insert wolf music.